I'm Brandi Cruz. Today on Undivided, an exclusive report. We always expected that the government was misrepresenting what Senate Bill 5599 would do, and now there is no denying it. Plus, coming up on Florida Report, Pink handing out banned books at her concerts in the Sunshine State, and between a Marxism club at Wenatchee High School and students in Olympia holding an anti-police rally, kids have the activism bug bad. That and more coming up today on Undivided. To support the show, you can sign up at undividedpod.com for just $5 a month. Welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We spent months on this show. Months detailing, picking apart Senate Bill 5599 in Washington State. I really believed at the onset of this amounted to government-sanctioned kidnapping of your kids. That this was the government coming in out of some desire ideologically to facilitate controversial surgeries or gender interventions for kids, and the government coming in to make it easier for kids to do those things without parental intervention, without parents having a say. I really felt like this was the government going too far in meddling in the relationship between parents and their kids, so much so that they were almost trying to replace parents. And remember the pushback we got. Remember the pushback you got for those of you who spoke up about this, who testified against it. You know, we were labeled transphobes. We were labeled fearmongers, hateful, liars, deceitful. And what were we told from Democrats in Olympia? What did Democrats in Olympia say over and over and over again that Senate Bill 55 was really about? They said it was about one thing, and one thing only, shelter.
What this does is provides a shelter for runaways and homeless youth, right? We're not talking about the other things that you're referring to as well.
This bill is about providing housing security for our trans youth.
This bill is about our LGBTQ youth that are sleeping on the streets.
Am I gonna let them stay out on the street, homeless, at risk, at risk?
Again, that is what this bill is intended to do. To ensure that these youth have access to safe housing.
The goal of this bill is to get kids off the street and somewhere safe.
This bill is about shelter.
This bill is about getting kids housed. That's what this bill is about.
Just about shelter. Just about making sure that kids aren't homeless. And when you word it like that, who could be opposed to a bill like that? This is about particularly transgender youth who are at risk, making sure that they're not sleeping out on the streets. Of course, that's dangerous. And meanwhile, those of us who are concerned because of the way the bill was written, that this would not only help make it easier for kids to make really serious medical decisions without their parents, but that taxpayers might be on the hook for some of these medical decisions from kids. And the pushback we got was astounding. It was unlike anything I've experienced personally. The attacks, the viciousness that persists today. We've talked about them. There are still political candidates who get attacked by the left for being tied to me because I supported the referendum to repeal Senate Bill 5599. But now, everything we feared about that bill has been confirmed. So for the past couple months, there has been a process taking place behind the scenes led by the Department of Commerce. And what this process has been doing is trying to award grants, $1.8 million in grants, to entities that are going to help carry out Senate Bill 5599. And all of this information, by the way, is available on the Department of Commerce website. We've saved it, screenshotted it, just in case after this they opt to take it down. So let's dive into some of what they had on their website and what they went through in a couple informative sessions for people who might be interested in applying for one of these grants. So according to the Department of Commerce, up to $1.8 million is available in taxpayer funds. It's a grant opportunity for organizations to provide supportive services for youth seeking protected health care under 5599. So they anticipate awarding four to six applicants with grants anywhere from $300,000 to $450,000. And they say in this PowerPoint, they list out what are protected healthcare, gender-affirming reproductive healthcare that we're discussing. They say that that could be gender-affirming healthcare, puberty blockers, HRT, voice training, surgeries, birth control. So they're saying that this $1.8 million is specifically for organizations who are going to help provide supportive services to youth who might be seeking these things. Okay. So when you say $1.8 million going to these organizations, you know, we already know that under Washington state law, kids 13 and over, they can make certain medical decisions on their own. 5599 didn't change that. So what kind of supportive services are we talking about here that this grant money could go to? So an early iteration of the Department of Commerce, what they call allowable costs. So let's go through this. Allowable costs. The expense, you can do transportation costs. So I'm talking again about where this $1.8 million could go to providing transportation costs. Maybe you've got a kid who needs transportation to a shelter, maybe a bus or an airline ticket. Transportation to a medical facility. It can also go to helping them obtain identification documents. It can go to educational purposes. It can go to employment. So maybe you need some sort of certification costs or training or licensing, clothing for an interview. It can also help pay for a hotel or a motel to house one of these runaway youths. It can pay for legal services, housing support. If you ran away from home, you need a place to live long term because you're not going back home. They can use this to pay for your housing. And then at the bottom, with a little asterisk, it said, please note that gender-affirming or reproductive health care items are allowable support service costs and that this list is being updated. Please note that gender-affirming or reproductive health care items are allowable support services. Okay. So they then updated their graphic on how this funding can be used. Again, this is funding directly tied to organizations that are going to help carry out the mandate of Senate Bill 5599. And I want you to pay attention to a few things. So again, it says stipend, lived experts for consultation work. So people who are going to consult with them from lived experience, they get a stipend. It also says medical advocacy. So taxpayer funds connected to 5599 can be used by these organizations to engage in medical advocacy for these youth, helping them navigate insurance, helping them understand their rights, navigating parental consent, transportation, and medical costs. Medical costs. So yes, people who might have feared that Senate Bill 5599 would result in taxpayers funding some of these procedures for kids, some of these medical interventions, you were correct. It also says that this money can be used for gender-affirming supplies and reproductive care supplies. And I'm going to come back to this, but just note, it also says legal services, that the money can be used for legal services. So there's also, when they were talking about who's going to receive these grants, right? What organizations are going to get a piece of that $1.8 million to provide shelter for these youth who have run away from home to seek protected health care? And remember, they also told us protected health care can be a variety of things. Yes, I mean, it can be, you know, some sort of gender care, but it can also be an abortion and reproductive care. But in their own words from the Department of Commerce, there is a type of organization that will be prioritized for these grants above all others. It says, based on what we've learned from community members most impacted by this work, we also plan to prioritize the following in our award decisions. They said they will prioritize proposals that provide support to youth seeking gender-affirming care. So their priority in doling out this $1.8 million is explicitly to organizations who are going to help youth get gender-affirming care. That's where they want this money to go. That's how they want this money to be used. Now, for those of you who might say, well, Brandy, if these kids want gender transition surgery, under state law, they still need parental consent for that. And that's true, partly. Remember, Washington State has something called the Mature Minor Doctrine. And the Mature Minor Doctrine can make it so that someone under the age of 18 could make any medical decision by themselves as long as they can get a healthcare provider to certify that they are a mature minor. So what does a medical provider have to consider when deciding whether a 14, 15-year-old, 16-year-old is a mature minor? So mature minor factors have to meet one or more of the following criteria. So a doctor presented with a minor would have to consider these things and decide if one or more of them are true. Do they have freedom from parents or guardian? Meaning, do they live apart? Are they living apart from their parents and managing their own affairs? They would weigh the age and maturity. Are they self-supporting? So are they financially independent from their parents? Are they involved in a work training program? They would also have to say, does the youth have training and experience to make a knowingly intelligent healthcare decision? And generally, does the youth demonstrate that they have the conduct of an adult? So why do I detail that? Because again, we were made out to be absolute fearmongers that Senate Bill 5599 doesn't change anything around access to healthcare for kids. This is about, remember, shelter. This is simply about shelter. We're giving them a safe place to be, and everything else, you know, they're going to do that, make those decisions on their own. The government's not going to make it easier for a kid to go in and get a gender change. But here's the thing. I want you to take into consideration everything we just laid out and look at it this way. So when we consider Washington State's mature minor doctrine, which allows for a kid to make even extreme medical decisions like gender transition surgery, if they can find a healthcare provider who will say, you're a mature minor. And what are the standards for that again? One of them is freedom from parents. Now, I would ask you, what is Senate Bill 5599 facilitating? It's facilitating freedom from parents. Nicole, can you revisit the graphic around allowable services. So these taxpayer funds that are going to go to these entities to help them support these kids for things like transportation, identification, education, employment, housing support. What is that facilitating? That is facilitating freedom from parents. So the government has put everything in place for these young people to run away from home, be protected at a shelter from their parents knowing where they are, and then they are using and awarding grants with taxpayer funds to help facilitate that minor, regardless of age, to be living a life free and independent from their parents. The taxpayer funds are going to help them get everything they need to be able to go to a medical provider and say, and argue that I'm a mature minor, including, as I mentioned earlier, legal services. So including, potentially, a child using taxpayer funds under Senate Bill 5599, taking advantage of free legal services paid for by the taxpayers to officially break from parental custody. This isn't conspiracy stuff. This is very clearly laid out. And again, what did they tell us when we brought this stuff up for months? They told us this is about shelter. This isn't controversial. This is about getting homeless kids off the street. How could you be opposed to that? No, this is a whole infrastructure that is designed and supported through taxpayer funds to pry kids away from their parents and keep them there and give kids the power and the independence to make a whole bevy of medical decisions without the consent of their parents. And along the way, not only are you paying for this, they are explicitly awarding these grants specifically to entities who are promising them through the application process that they are an entity that is focused on providing support to youth seeking gender-affirming care. That is where the tax money, explicitly by the Department of Commerce, these grants, is being focused. And then they will give them every tool, every resource, whatever they need to be able to show a doctor that they're a mature minor and that they can get something like a gender reassignment surgery without parental consent, bypassing other state laws. And if that does not make it as plain as day, I don't know what will. And that's why it is so critical to trust your gut and to trust your instincts. When you see that there are clear issues with how a bill is written, when the bill allows for things like this, but the people pushing it say, yeah, but those are extreme scenarios, that's not going to happen. No, the bill is designed to allow that to happen. So the grant awards are being considered as we speak to individuals who submitted applications. The application process closed 2 days ago. So our next follow-up story is going to be what entities are granted these taxpayer funds? What are they about? What do they do? And critically, what is the oversight process going to be? All right, moving on. The kids these days have the activist bug. And is it a wonder? Is it any surprise to us that we have youth younger and younger getting involved in not just any activism, controversial activism. You know, it's not like the days in the 70s, you got the anti-war protesters, that's fine. I think it was a little controversial at the time, or kids who are walking out of school for climate change, whatever it is. There's two real crazy stories back to back that we wanted to fit in today. One of them, I just have to say, this is not a surprise because you're electing people to the school board who hate cops in Olympia. We talked about one of them on the show this week, Jess Turtelot Palumbo, who says that SROs, school resource officers, come from the seat of racism and that they shouldn't be allowed in school. So is it any wonder that kids in Olympia, some students organized by the Leftist Student Union of Olympia, they're going to be holding today as we speak, about 10 minutes from now, half hour from now? Yeah, so in a little bit, they're going to meet up at City Hall. Oh, wait, this is Saturday.
Yeah, this is Saturday.
Sorry. Saturday.
Yeah,
so this they is have Saturday. Some time.
But Jess will be there.
Jess Turtelot Palumbo is going to attend. Shocking. Although she said that maybe her remarks about SROs weren't quite taken in context. Clearly they are if she's going to be at a No Cops in OSD schools
rally.
And
we did invite her on.
And she said in the comments that she wasn't going to come on our show.
Yeah, she said she would. Then we invited her on.
And she said she's not. And she blamed hateful comments in my on my Facebook post as if I'm can control 200,000 people and how they comment. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it's a rally against school resource officers in Olympia schools. They're going to meet up at Olympia City Hall, and then they're going to rally from 1 to 3 p.m. Okay.
And they will be, they would like everybody to wear masks.
They would like everyone to wear masks.
Of course.
Yeah, definitely not for the spread of COVID. Mm-hmm. So I want to introduce you to one of the student organizers who you actually have heard from before. He was at a protest against me when I was at Cutter's Point Coffee Company collecting signatures to overturn Senate Bill 5599, and he was outside with a bullhorn and had some really, really profound things to say. Yeah, he's a child. And he is literally that is a profound argument against what we were there doing. And so it's not a particular surprise that this student organizer has a highly questionable Instagram presence. I am actually pretty shocked that Instagram allows this. The fact that we get curtailed and our reach gets shut down, and I was worried yesterday on the show about posting a clip of me reading a sexually explicit short story that kids had to read in 10th grade, and I have to be that careful. Yet here you have this kid. His screen name on Instagram is I Killed a Police Officer. I Killed a Police Officer. And then he posts things such as, I'm bored. I'm going to go steal stuff from local businesses. How is this allowed? He's got, wow, he's got almost 500 followers. That's not bad for a kid and he's activist. He's got a
few different accounts. This is the one of the main ones and one of the most ridiculous and named ones.
My understanding is involved in the account Abolish OSD.
Yes, he runs it, I believe.
So that Instagram account has its own issues, and they have not only gone after us, but gone after some of our friends, like Alicia Perkins. It says, attention, we need your student art, your student literature, your experiences in OSD for our next issue, especially if it pertains to SROs or injustice. Send it to us. And then they have these little, it's babies, but they put the face of Alicia Perkins on one of them, Frank DeRozier, school board candidate, on one of them, and then Melissa McCarthy on one of them. So yeah, this is really, really mature stuff. But again, is it any surprise that you have kids spewing this level of vitriol who go to a school where the school board spews that level of vitriol? You hear adults doing it. You just had school board candidates who ran basically on the platform of hating cops. You had a school board candidate, Talana Reed, who's currently sitting on the school board right now. Thankfully, she lost her race, but who called cops pigs and who encouraged people to riot in the city and destroy stuff. And I'm not surprised if adults in Olympia can't even control themselves and can't stop spreading hate and vitriol. What makes you think that some kids are going to be able to? So this is a direct reflection of the environment that has been allowed in the Olympia School District, has been encouraged in the Olympia School District, and has been voted in by voters in the Olympia School District. All right, we're going to go for another student activism story to somewhere I never thought we'd go for a student activism story. We're going to Wenatchee High School. I'm telling you guys, this stuff is spreading. This isn't Seattle. This isn't Olympia. This isn't Bellingham stuff. This is absolutely these extremist ideologies being fostered, and in part because there's a whole swath of reasonable people who don't want to push back against it because they're worried about offending God knows who. So this was in a student newspaper at Wenatchee High School. It was an article about their new Marxism club, which is going to meet during the lunch hour in Mr. Needham's room during the lunch hour. This is so insane. So it's this whole, it says, Marxism is characterized as the political and economic theories of Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels, later developed by their followers as a basis for the theory and practice of communism and socialism. Marxism focuses on the far-left methods and philosophy of socioeconomic analysis that uses a materialist interpretation of historical development to understand class relations and social conflicts. So then it goes on to say that this is going to be a great Marxism Club's basic goal is not to spread political ideologies to the public, but to offer a safe space for students to be themselves without judgment, as well as debunking commonly accepted myths and stigmas surrounding Marxism and related ideology. Yeah, I'm sure that that's going to be a very non-biased fact check that they're going to be having in Mr. Needham's classroom during the lunch hour. We wrestled with whether to even reach out to the school about this. Because, yes, there's First Amendment issues, and if you allow this kind of speech, do you have to allow that kind of speech? And if you allow accepted sort of more mainstream political ideologies, do you have to allow the Marxism Club? Now, I'm split on that. Again, I think if you say no Marxism Club, then what other clubs do you have to get rid of? And for instance, with student government and, kids are going to be kids. But the fact that this is being facilitated in a teacher's classroom at the lunch hour, to me, is an opportunity for kids to go to school in the middle of the day and become extremists and spread this ideology to other students who really don't understand it. And they're not going to seek to understand it outside this classroom where these meetings are happening during lunch. But again, this is the Wenatchee School District. This is Wenatchee High School. And in big, bold print in their student newspaper, big, long story explaining their new Marxism club. And this is where we're at. And man, these young kids have the activist bug. And you know what I think it is? When they take on these fights that really they know nothing about, like what's happening in the Middle East, and them being pro-Palestine and pro-Hamas, I think a lot of these kids have never lived through a generation that has had a true, true national struggle, world struggle. I don't think they've had anything that they really had to fight for or fight against that was deeply meaningful. And I think when you're kind of rebelling in those years, you want to have something you can fight for or fight against. And they've had such easy freaking lives, comparably to previous generations, that they're just looking for anything that they can rebel against. And that's what you're seeing here. And it's being fueled by adults. That's important to understand as well. This stuff is being fueled by what adults are okay with and the hate and fear and ideologies that adults spew themselves. All right, coming up in our segment, Unbelievable, more students are being robbed at gunpoint. We're now learning about the age of one of the suspects arrested in some of these crimes. It is truly unbelievable. But first, if you're interested in putting your home on the market, maybe you have a little bit of leeway as to when you can do that. Maybe you don't. Maybe you're moving out of state. You don't have a choice. You got to put that thing on the market now. I would highly advise, sure, reach out to a few real estate agents, but touch base with our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com because he's going to give you a free market analysis. And then if you need some help, maybe making some updates on your home just to make sure it really shines when it hits the market, he and his team have something called the Listing Boost Concierge Service, and they can help you with a wide range of things and even help you pay for it up front.
There is a certain dollar amount that I can go to. Mm. If there is something that is bigger than that, we do have some other resources that are available that we can tie into, kind of like a line of credit. But there hasn't been anything that we have not been able to handle yet. And if you guys have questions, you know, let me know. And if you've got a project, you're like, gosh, can this guy handle or not? Just fire it over. I'd love to have that conversation and have somebody stump me with something.
Yeah. And he's the son of a builder. So he actually really enjoys those projects. Some real estate agents, they're like, we don't want a project. We want a house that's ready to hit the market. No, they can help you with that. And I think that's really cool. It's a really cool service. So sellwithwes.com. Start by simply using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay. We talked on the show a couple weeks ago now about kids not being safe when they're walking to and from school in Seattle. There was a high school in the Ballard neighborhood, I believe it was, that had kids would be walking away from school or walking to school. And these suspects who would be driving usually stolen vehicles is the belief because it was like a Kia or a Hyundai. And they would jump out and rob these kids at gunpoint. I mean, how horrifying for parents, especially when you got a kid who's only walking a few blocks home. Well, apparently this is now happening outside other schools in Seattle as well, this time on the south end. So the article from Como News, Franklin High School robbed at...
Do you want to do Unbelievable?
Oh my gosh, Nicole. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. Are you happy, Nicole?
Yes.
Okay, all right. People would have been very mad if we missed it. Okay, this article from Como News. Franklin High School student robbed at gunpoint after school in South Seattle. An SPD spokesperson told Como News the student was robbed at gunpoint after school by 4 to 5 males wearing black masks. Police said the two suspects who were arrested, so that's good that they got at least two suspects, were juveniles, one of them being... a 12-year-old boy. A 12-year-old boy. And Como also says that there have been at least 15 Franklin students robbed in that manner this year. It sounds an awful lot like what was happening at the other high school, for sure. But when you consider that, So these are juveniles, and I kind of suspect that they were either juveniles or young adults, just based on a pattern of behavior. You know, stolen vehicles, Kia, Hyundai, some of the other crimes that we've been seeing, like the string of attacks on elderly Asian Americans. Those were either teenagers or young adults. Thankfully, a handful of them got arrested. But if you remember in this string of attacks on elderly Asian Americans, the individual who was accused of doing the most serious bulk of those was a 16-year-old. And remember, he was mortified to find out that he wasn't going to be let go on house arrest. And I said at the time, I really think that because there were some adults in that crime ring, I think that they had the 16-year-old commit the most serious crimes as part of it because they knew that the criminal justice system will be lenient on him. And it was likely, and they probably told him, even if we get caught, you'll be out by 18. Because that's typically how these things work. And I have to imagine that this is probably the same thing with this 12-year-old boy. There are probably gang members who are adults, who are facilitating these crime waves, who are recruiting teenage boys and telling them, convincing them, showing them examples of, hey, you can do this, we'll pay you money, because what is a 12-year-old boy going to be excited by? $100? New pair of shoes or something? And they're telling them, even if you get caught, nothing's going to happen to you because you're not an adult. And that's even more reason why we need to throw the book at these gang members to send a message that even if you're a minor, you're going to get in trouble for this. So that these 12-year-olds, 16-year-olds can't be convinced by some gang member who's older that they should do this and that they can get away with it. But that is absolutely the pattern that I see. Young males who have probably themselves as juveniles gotten slaps on the wrist, they enter adulthood, and then they convince other juveniles to do exactly what they did because they got away with it too. And if you don't think that interrupting that pattern of behavior is going to take actual punishments to set an example, then I don't know what to tell you. Absolutely unbelievable, Nicole. Okay, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. I've been talking about some of the real success stories on this program. I mean, I'm one of them. I lost more than 35 pounds on the program, and I have found that it really fits into my life. You know, there are, of course, this time of year, especially events and things where you're like, oh gosh, and I've been on all the yo-yo diets in the world, so where it's like, my old pattern used to be, was on a diet, I got off track, maybe I went on vacation or went to an event, and then it was downhill from there. And then I never got back on track. The wonderful thing about Eastside Weight Loss is it is a program that is with you for life and that you can easily go back to if you have one or two days where you just did not do what you wanted to do. So if it sounds like something that might appeal to you, no prepackaged meals, no counting calories, no strenuous workout routines, then schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team and ask all the questions that you have. Look, not every weight loss program is going to be right for every person. And so if you want to talk it over, that's exactly what the free 15-minute consultation is for. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Okay, dipping outside of Washington State, it is Thursday after all, so we're going to visit the Sunshine State and talk about some of the rifts between Trump and DeSantis, and also Pink has an interesting gift for fans that go to her concerts. Let's get to it.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, greetings.
Greetings.
Oh, so good to see you. Okay, so let's start with a bill or an effort that I actually disagree with fundamentally. But so there is an effort among Florida Republicans when it comes to scholarships and grants for students to block them if they are supporting a particular group. Which group is that?
Basically, if they're supporting any sort of terrorist groups like Hamas, but it also refers to Palestine, too. So I don't know. It's kind of confusing for me because I don't know how they're going to differentiate between the students who are pro-Palestine or pro-terrorist organizations.
Yeah.
It does not define what that support is. Right. So it doesn't really say, like, you know, what it doesn't. To me, it's so up in the air that they're going to run into a whole bunch of First Amendment issues if they start doing this.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's a blatant First Amendment violation. Remember, the First Amendment protects us against government retribution, essentially, for expressing. So, you know, people always talk about, you know, there are private punishments, so to speak, for speech. But it's about the government. And to me, this is the government saying, if you are engaged in speech we don't like, even if it's abhorrent, like supporting a terror organization, we as the government are going to punish you monetarily. And I just don't see, to me, it's like one of those things in Florida where it's like, let's send a message that this isn't okay here, but also, you know, cross a lot of constitutional boundaries in the meantime. Now, Ron DeSantis did say, as part of his presidential bid, that he would plan to cancel student visas for anyone sharing, quote, common cause with Hamas. And I see the concern, you know, if there's someone who's like pro Hamas and they want a visa from Palestine to study here. But that, I don't know how you, like you said, how do you decide what is sharing common cause with Hamas?
Yeah, and especially in an issue like this, where I think there's a lot of lack of education in general and people are just very passionate. You know, nobody likes to see war, and it's easy to just, you know, form an opinion without actually understanding what your opinion is, you know, representing or what, how it's coming across. So I think that it could just put a lot of, like, you know, very like innocent students in a position where they shouldn't be in, simply for either a lack of education or because they just don't know how to express their opinion in an educated way because they feel passionate. So I don't know. I don't think it's going to get put through. You're right. It's probably just another one of those, this is a message and we're going to say it out loud and proud. You know, it's a touchy subject.
Yeah, it's really weird to me. DeSantis does this, though. We talked about this in several ways. He almost like tries to push back against wokeness in a way that's like just takes things full circle and just goes way too far. So I don't know. I don't get it. It's not my particular favorite brand of politics.
No.
Okay, let's see. There's news outlets continue to be shocked by Floridians supporting Trump over DeSantis. Are you shocked by that?
I'm not shocked by that because I think that they were both supported for completely different reasons. Like, people supported DeSantis to be our governor. They like what he does for our state. They supported Trump to be our president, and they liked what he was doing for our country in their own opinion. So now you have our governor who is campaigning all across the nation and not really ceded what he was voted by Floridians to do. And I think that that's pretty logical to be a Floridian who voted for DeSantis and think, all right, you're not doing what I voted you for, and Trump's doing what I want him to do. So I think that it's pretty logical to me. It's not a surprise by any measure that he's losing the support of Floridians in the presidential race, because they didn't vote for him to be president. They voted for him to be the governor.
Yeah, but also, I mean, governors run for president all the time. And our governor had a short-lived bid for the presidency. And it's not like just because he was our governor, the Democratic Party in our state supported him. Of course they didn't. So that that doesn't make any sense. And part of it does have to do with, well, can he win, right? And right now it seems pretty clear that Trump is just so far out ahead. So the idea that, oh, just because you're a candidate from that state, that your party has to support you in that state, I don't know why the media is so surprised by it. All right, one more. Since we talked about a reading that happened in a 10th grade classroom in Seattle that was deeply inappropriate, and then people were like, oh, you want to ban books, Brandy? No, but I think parents ought to have a right to consent to what their kids are reading in schools. Pink is having, at her Florida concerts, she's got a gift for folks.
Yeah, she's going to be giving out about 2,000 different banned books at her concerts. I'm not sure what she's going to do, throw them at the crowd or hand them out at the ticket booths. But this always bothers me because I don't think that the public school is the end all be all of education. And if you can't get something at public school, then go find it on Amazon or another library. I don't know. It's such a weird way to promote banned books. Is that a concert?
I don't know. I just don't care. It's like, if you want to spend all that money giving out banned books that, like you said, people can just go get on Amazon. It's not like the state of Florida is saying, like, burning every copy of this book in the middle of the streets. No, they're saying, as a government, we're not going to be responsible for putting this literature in the hands of kids or whatever it is. And we can have a reasonable debate. But if Pink wants to then hand them out, okay, you're not... The government isn't stopping people from reading those books. So it's just virtue signaling.
I think the word banned is being used a little bit too broadly because it really is just about narrowing the focus in school to the education and the curriculum that kids really do need. And social issues can be, and they're better taught outside of the classroom too, yeah, by family and friends.
Yeah, so. And this whole idea of course, there have always been books deemed inappropriate for schools. You wouldn't put Playboy magazine in the school library. So that is, are we calling that banned? Oh, that's been banned? No, it's just what is appropriate for people that age for the government to allow them access to and what isn't. So yeah. Anyway, okay, Miranda, so good to see you. I know you got out, enjoyed the great outdoors in Florida this past weekend. So I'm happy to see you just looking and sounding a whole lot better.
Yes, I'm getting there for sure. I still have a little bit of a raspy voice, but better every day.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not sure if we're going to see you next week because it's Thanksgiving. We don't have a show on Thursday. Who knows? Maybe we'll do something early. So I won't promise anything yet, but we'll see you soon.
See you soon.
It's not even controversial
anymore.
Not even
controversial.
People know
anymore.
In Florida, their freedoms are going to be respected.
And we had a couple people in the comments saying, Pinkot, this is Matthew Cook. Pinkot community noted on X regarding her banned book list. Not only did she list books not banned, but some are part of school curriculum. Oops. And also, it's Matthew Cook's birthday. Nicole, if you want to at least turn your mic on. I know you don't like singing happy birthday, but you don't have to sing it on camera. Mm-hmm. You ready, everyone? Happy birthday to you. Nicole, where are you? Happy really birthday to you. She's totally leaving me hanging. Mm-hmm. Happy birthday, dear Matthew Cook. Happy birthday to you.
Very nice, Brandy.
Thank you. Oh, my goodness. I am the best. All right, Nicole, we appreciate it, per the usual. I've been talking about First Mark Insurance because I'm a huge fan, and I'm a huge believer in it. And Mike and I are members of the First Mark family now, and we knew we were really underinsured. We were about to get married, and so we were going to have to look at revamping our insurance anyway. Our friend Dory had done First Mark Insurance as an advertiser for years, and we're like, well, let's take the First Mark challenge. We did. We loved the process. They came back to us. Now we have much better insurance for the same price. It's like, why did we wait so long to do that? Dave Taylor is the CEO of First Mark, and he says, yes, a lot of people come to them because they want to save money, but then they find some of the other benefits that they have to offer.
How much time did it take for you?
A couple hours.
Okay. So
total.
All in a couple hours, yep. From the time we gather the information, do the presentation and go through everything, it's a couple hours of time,
yeah.
Right? And so, and I would say that's probably on the high end,
yeah.
Right?
It ranges. We were chatty. We were very chatty.
A little chatty, yes, exactly. Anywhere from an hour to 2 hours is the investment in time to find out, and there's no obligation. There's no extra fees if you become a First Mark client. We are paid the same way every other insurance agency in the state of Washington is paid. We're paid by the insurance company that is the writer of your business. And so, yeah, there's nothing to lose.
I love it. I just saw Heidi Ryan said in the comments, just talk to First Mark today. Let us know how it goes. And it's not a quick process. It's not, 15 minutes and they're going to save you whatever percentage. I don't know if I can say the actual things. I don't want to get sued by that particular company. But it's a higher quality product. It's higher quality service. So it's going to take a little bit longer. But the outcomes, I mean, there's so many positive things can happen. And at the end of the day, if they come back to you and say, well, actually, you have good insurance, then what do you have to lose? FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. You know what, you guys? How rude are you in comments today about my singing capability? Mugshot Espresso says, remind me never to go to karaoke with you.
Ouch.
Andy says, someone super chat to stop the pain?
Wow.
Andy, that is so mean. I did my best. I was singing for our friend. I'm just deeply hurt and offended. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. That wasn't my best singing either. You know, I could probably have done better.
It's not a fun song to sing, really. I that's always been my thing with that song. It doesn't showcase your voice in a very nice way for really anybody.
I'm not sure there is a song that would showcase my voice well. All right, let's get to our daily subscriber poll before we get to some other questions and comments, although nobody ever gives me questions. They just post comments, which is fine. All right, the topic of
there
our daily subscriber...
Time.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. The topic of our daily subscriber poll, which we posted today on Patreon and Locals, we discussed a segment we did on yesterday's show, the sexually explicit reading assignment given to 10th grade students at Lincoln High School in Seattle. My question for you was... should such reading assignments be allowed as long as parents are informed beforehand? And I have to say, I'm actually pretty surprised so far by the results on Patreon and Locals. I thought, given, you know, the parental rights thing, that more people would say yes, as long as parents consent to it, then sure. But no, overwhelmingly, you guys are rejecting the idea that readings like that, which I will say it was pretty sexually explicit, would be okay even if parents are notified. Let's see. Kyle says, hard no. There are certain lines public schools do not need to cross. This is one of them. Jack says, no, but at the same time, homeschooling isn't the answer. School is important for kids to develop their social skills, relationships, and experience to overcome adversity, which is very true. Plus, who the hell can afford to live on a singular income in Western Washington these days? Also very true. H says, why are these schools trying so hard to sexualize kids? Like I said, if the lesson was about assimilating immigrants to the U.S., why did it have to be a short story that was so sexual in nature? And I did. Somebody was like, you probably didn't read the whole thing. No, I did read the whole thing. It was a short story. But that doesn't mean that reading the whole thing negates the real pervy sections that you made kids read. Okay, Ron Williamson says, under no circumstances should this be allowed. The parents should have been made aware long before the students were given this. Teach the kids what they need, like the three R's.
What's reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Isn't arithmetic an A?
Yeah, but they call it an R.
All right. Pornography has no place in schools, he says. Over on locals, let's see. Weisscastle says, getting informed parental consent is costly. Is a costly boondoggle for unnecessary material. Shapes says, allowed, sure, but why? Is the material really important in getting across the curriculum? Is the instructor's interest really pedantic or simply prurient? Why do you guys have to use words I might not know so I sound stupid?
Prevalent?
Hold on. No, I'm going to... Prurient. Wait. Having or encouraging an excessive interest in sexual matters. Prurient. I learn a new word every day. You guys are so smart. See? Why do you listen to me? I'm obviously lacking in the intelligence section. Let me see. One more. Essie Quam Videri says, if these are taxpayer-funded schools, taxpayers should also get to weigh in, not just the parents, because if these are public schools, that means the taxpayers would be buying the books and material to be there in the first place. Yeah, I think this was a printout in this case, but obviously if it were books, that would be the case. Okay, and we'll leave those polls open on Patreon or Locals. Remember, if you want to take part in our daily subscriber polls, you do have to subscribe, undividedpod.com. Okay, let's get to some questions and comments, but first, this is a feature that not a lot of people take advantage of. We have an undivided ultra tier, which is $50 a month, and one of the benefits is it comes with a shout out on the show, but you have to opt into it, and I'm surprised that so few people send me a message to opt into it. But Daniel Hoffman is opting in, and he says he wants to highlight his family's small business, River's Edge Lavender Farm in Puyallup. And he says, I want to encourage people to take a look at our website, riversedgelavenderfarm.com, in time for Christmas and holiday gift giving. I love that. Thank you for your support, Daniel Hoffman and family, as Ultra subscribers. So if you're an Ultra subscriber, you're like, wait a second, I haven't gotten a shout out. You got to opt into it. It says in the little thing. So send me a message and we'll get you a shout out. All right. Let me see here. $55.99. Crafty Grandma Crispy says, feeding the big pharma machine. Need to have people who are dependent on medication for the rest of their lives. And the youth on the street are the most vulnerable and the most easily led. Yeah, and I found it interesting that one of the things they'd pay for is a hotel. It's like, wait a second. I thought the point was shelter to a shelter that's explicitly for this purpose. So why would the shelter that's being given taxpayer funds to house these kids who run away from home need to get them a hotel? That makes no sense to me. Sergeant Pickles, is there a path for a group of citizens to sue the state for misrepresenting or outright lying about the legislation? I'm not sure. There would have to be a basis to file the lawsuit for. I mean, I think one of the best ways would have been a referendum of the people, or there's an ongoing initiative at letsgowa.com that is somewhat pertinent to this issue. But I will say, I still think this is unconstitutional and goes against a parent's right to rear their children. And so, I don't know if there's still an active ongoing lawsuit about $55.99. There might be. Don't take my word at that, because I don't know if it has proceeded in the process. Let me see here. Matt, somewhere Kamala just got a tingling feeling from the Venn diagram. Yeah, she has a thing for Venn diagrams, apparently.
She really does.
Joel Locke, a child, no matter their physical maturity, is still a child mentally. Mary Locke says, the start of the mature minor theory fits with Washington State's liberal abortion laws regarding minors. Olympia makes laws that undermine and take away parental rights. Wes Martin says, just when you think the leftists can't get any more insane, they surprise us, unfortunately. On the Olympia School District and the activist kid who runs these crazy accounts, Jason M. says, that kid's going places, probably wants to be a Seattle city councilman. Hey, at this rate, he could be an Olympia city councilman because it's basically the same thing. Kathy says, wow, scary to think that these kids will soon have the right to vote. Scary indeed. Although I also think that there is a whole other swath of kids who are on a fiercely independent streak. And this is actually them having to go to school with kids like that is actually helping that independent streak a little bit, in my opinion. Jennifer says, I like your singing. The fact that you will sing just on a whim. Thank you, Jennifer. Anne says, maybe they shouldn't have disbanded the gang unit. Did they disband the gang unit?
Yeah.
I thought they just folded it into another unit. Why is my hair so bad today?
mine is too. That's why I'm not putting up my camera.
You look fine. I look crazy.
But yes, no, I believe they did. They said that they didn't have enough officers to take them. And so, yes, I think that there's probably still some officers assigned to gangs. But no, they did. That was a thing.
Yeah, I think that they probably, I mean, 90% of the crime issues at Seattle are happening, not 90%. 90% of the violent crime issues, I'm just making this statistic up, but if I say it with enough confidence, it'll sound right, are tied to gangs. I mean, there's a lot tied to drugs, but remember, drugs have a tie to gangs as well. So somebody, don't ask me for evidence of that statistic. I'm just going based on my brain. Okay, good questions and comments per the usual. You guys are feisty today, and I love it, but I'm never singing for you again. I'm never singing for you again. If it's your birthday tomorrow, too bad. Not singing for you, except you, Jennifer. I'll sing for you. And I'm not singing for Nicole either because she left me out hanging. All right, it is Thursday today. Coming up at 3 p.m. today, there's still time to register for Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital's final live webinar of the year. I'll talk about that in a moment. But of course, Zach joins us every Thursday to talk about what's happening out there in the economy and what might happen in the months ahead. And Nicole and I, as big Costco fans, there was an item sold at Costco recently that I just could not help but ask Zach Abraham about. One fun thing, one serious thing today. How's that sound?
I love it.
To ask you about this because Costco was selling 1 ounce bars of gold and they sold out like lickety split and the price of gold has gone up. So is that something that's just, because I see those, you know, late at night when you're watching the trashy TV and you see the commercial come on, invest in gold. Is that something people should be doing?
So I have a very interesting and intricate relationship with gold. I actually spent, my mother has pictures of me at 3 years old in a diaper playing in a mud puddle out in front of a gold mining operation. So my father and grandfather were involved in that business. My father is still the CEO of a publicly traded gold mining company. So I grew up around it. And I have a joke with other people that have been around gold for a long time, which is to have been around gold for a really long time makes you highly suspect of it. And what I mean is that I think gold is probably a good investment right now. But people think about gold the wrong way. First of all, gold should not be an investment. It's not an investment. Why is it not an investment? Because it doesn't have any cash flow, right? There's also no one-off thing that makes gold go up. So people go, well, inflation does. And I go, oh, really? Well, look at how gold performed last year when inflation was the hottest in 40 years. It did virtually nothing. But gold is an insurance policy because gold is sort of like volatility, meaning when there's something called volatility that we can buy in the markets. And it'd take me forever to explain really what it is. But bottom line is, to give you an idea, the volatility index during the COVID crash went from 15 to 90 in 6 weeks. Okay, so it goes up when things go crazy. Gold is much the same way, especially when currencies collapse and things like that. Gold is a wonderful insurance policy. Take it from a guy that has been around the industry, that has made a lot of money investing in gold mining. It's great to have 5, maybe even 7% of your portfolio value in gold, but think of it not as it's an insurance policy if things go wild, because gold, and people are always trying to sell it. So while you hear it on late at night, move your IRA into gold. Absolutely. Do not listen to that. Do not do that. Having some is fine. Do not convince anybody to get you to go all in.
I spent my whole life savings on the gold bars at Costco. So I imagine I should have done
that. You're in deep.
I'm in deep. Wouldn't be the most expensive thing I've ever bought at Costco. Okay, I want to get your...
Me too.
Yeah,
me
right? too. Yeah. So there was some good news, but I'm curious if it's really good or if it's sort of a false flag. So stock market went up, and this is after a report that inflation rose at the slowest annual pace since September of 2021. Should we read too much into that?
Yeah, no. And the reason why is, guess what happens to inflation metrics as you go into recession?
What happens,
they
Zach?
Go down. Okay, so 2 weeks ago, we were on our radio show and we were telling people, because it's really crazy, Brandy, if you're watching the stuff like we are on a day-to-day basis, everything's been pretty much flat all year, much to my surprise. I really thought we'd have saw some weakening. And then all of the sudden in the last 3 to 4 weeks, the data is just going off a cliff, okay? And so 2 weeks ago, we were doing a radio show and we're like, hey, everybody, we want you to prepare yourselves right now. This is really going to bake your brain. You're going to start seeing bad data come out. And when you do, the stock market's going to celebrate, because the stock market, including the media and everybody else, has bought into this ludicrous idea of a soft or no landing. Okay. So meaning, they think we can raise interest rates and then the Fed can strategically cut them in time. We're looking at default rates going through the roof. And we said, look, you're going to see bad data come out and the stock market's going to shoot up because interest rates fell. This is part of a bear market, where we refer to bear markets being a hall of mirrors, because there's these relationships that happen. The other thing is this quote unquote stock surge they're talking about. The vast majority of that has been short covering, what we call, or guys that were betting against things. So if you're shorting a stock, you're betting on that stock going down. That's how you make money. The way you get out of that trade is by buying the stock, right? And so when guys think markets are going to go up, they'll cover their short bets and it'll look like, oh man, look at all that energy. There's all this buying going into the market. It's really guys just taking their bets off the table. But no, this is nothing. And another easy way to tell, just go look at revenues and profits this year on the S&P. On an inflation adjusted basis, they're negative. The market's up 18%. Just be careful.
So do you know, have any way of telling how long this trajectory will go before it falls off a cliff?
We can look back through history for guide points. Usually this period of time is anywhere from 1 to 3 months, where the market is grappling and saying, right? Because you listen to the zeitgeist in the media, you listen to so many, the only problem out there, but the Bidenomics are working amazing, right? Just as long as we get inflation under control, that's the big thing. Well, what do you think gave us a 20% increase in consumer spending over the last 3 years? It wasn't Bidenomics, it was, right? It was inflation. And that's the thing that confuses people, is that you can have a scenario where prices keep going up and the economy is in recession. The other thing is, we've talked about this before, I think, lag effects. Everybody's like, well, if interest rates are so bad on the economy, why is everything going so well? And you're like, well, we've got the same delinquency and default rates as we did in like 2009. So things aren't going well. But you gave people so much money, it takes a while for them to spend that down, you know? And so... I would say historically, it's 1 to 3 months. I will say that as of right now, and this stuff can be noisy, as of right now, it's turning down even at a pace that's kind of surprising to us. This is definitely not something anybody should be getting encouraged about. As a matter of fact, for people managing their own money, I think it's probably an opportunity to take some risk off the table here. And the data is what it is. And we've got several data points that 100% of the time in the past when they've happened, you've had a recession within 6 months. So, you know, if you want to go bet against 100% accuracy in the past, be my guest. But, you know, I'm not going to.
Yeah, it's a good point. It helps me understand it a little more clearly when you talk about how fast the stimulus came in and how that's, we're going to probably see that reflected and how fast things take a dive. So, Zach Abraham, we appreciate it. Noted on the gold. Facet, I learned something about you. I didn't know. I love the show Gold Rush. You ever watch that?
Yeah, I have. I have. And I actually know some of those properties. And we were on a bigger scale than that. You know, those are kind of like just kind of what we refer to in the gold industry is like the gold equivalent of wildcatters, like going out there on their own.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I've been to several mines up and down North America and grew up in the industry, you know, going down thousands of feet underground and just thinking that's normal. And it's kind of one of those things I look back fondly to, because it was a very odd experience for a 5-year-old, 10-year-old, you know, so kind of got an inside education, if you will.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I love it. All right, Zach, we'll see you next week.
All right. Thank you guys so much. We'll see you next week.
That's Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital. Reminder, they're having their final live webinar of the year actually today at 3 p.m. So after we're done, don't do it now. You got it. We need your full attention for Sanity Check. It's a good one. But after we're done today, go sign up. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. All right, let's get to our Sanity Check today, because if you're hoping to get some great holiday shopping in the Seattle area, just might not be it. All right, apparently the Seattle, Tacoma, and Bellevue area ranks the worst in the country for Christmas shopping. The worst in the country. According to Bankrate, Detroit, this is why I think these are such BS. But we'll go through it anyway and just have fun with it. Detroit has the best city for local, is the best city for local shopping. Seattle is the worst. It says Seattle held last place in our ranking. Back of the pack scores in affordability and retail accessibility dragged down the Emerald City. Seattle has the third most expensive prices and the highest sales tax rate at 10.25% compared to the other metros, contributing to its low affordability ranking. Seattle also has limited shopping options compared to other cities. It landed in the 23rd spot for the number of retail establishments per 10,000 establishments, and in the 20th spot for retail establishments per capita. But the bottom city, they say, does have one redeeming quality. After accounting for housing costs, Seattleites bring home bigger paychecks compared to those in other cities, boosting their local buying power. Nicole, why did you put in the description of this story Tacoma and Bellevue?
Oh, well, because I just didn't want you to think it was only Seattle.
It says
is
Seattle.
Our state. I think it's our state's policies.
Oh, I see what you mean, but it says is Seattle.
But it does, it lumps in the state with those. If you look at the article further down, it'll say.
I think that's unfair to Bellevue. Because Bellevue has that, what do they call their magical downtown holiday shopping extravaganza?
Like Snowflake Lane?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How can that be considered a bad place?
Well, the reason that I thought this was a great Sanity Check story is because we keep upping the minimum wage here.
Yeah.
And we keep, like they said, oh, it's a positive. They give everybody a lot of money, right? Everybody gets paid really well. So you spend more money. And so people from out of state don't want to come here, right? So I think that there's this like tiered, you know, ripple effect from, oh, let's raise the minimum wage. Let's, you know, up all these taxes. Let's do all of these things that scare other people off, and it looks good, like, oh, minimum wage is going up, great, everybody's going to get a raise, but then everything's going to get more expensive.
Yeah.
and less people are going to come in and consume.
Yeah, I think also, though, when it talks about limited shopping options, limited number of retail establishments, is that any surprise in Seattle? Have you been to...
Or Tacoma or Bellevue. Like, they're all struggling because you can't...
I don't think Bellevue is struggling.
Bellevue was getting, like, stormed by people and Nordstrom.
Yeah, no, but the point I'm trying to make is Seattle definitely has a tie to its city policies.
Absolutely.
Definitely. If you look at... And crime. So if you look at Pacific Place in downtown Seattle, go in there.
Mm-hmm.
Go in there. They did all this remodeling around the time of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So it physically looks beautiful. It's empty.
Totally.
It is absolutely empty. And I don't know what they're going to do with it. And then you look at some of the retail shops that have closed in Seattle over concerns about crime. And yes, I think 2020 and the rioting had a lot to do with that. Look at the Banana Republic. They boarded up after it was looted to the studs, never reopened.
Nope.
Never reopened. I mean, I was down there walking through naked mannequins in the streets that had had every item of clothing snatched off of them. Mm-hmm. So you have this huge anti-business animus that has resulted in it, A, being an unpleasant place to go with few options for shopping because of such a bad climate where nobody wants to be down there shopping.
Right. Definitely. So, I think all of this, I mean, in this, all of that was considered. So that's why, yes, in this, that little list that I gave you was just Seattle. But they actually clump all of us in this state to terrible for consumers
for
because of our tax rates and our minimum wage.
Yeah, and I will say though, Seattle, I used to go downtown for Christmas shopping in Seattle. When I first moved here 13 years ago, you do the Christmas lighting. You know when I stopped? I stopped after about the third Christmas where the activists came and they shut down the children carolers.
Yes.
Because they were, I think that was during the Occupy movement or maybe it was Black Lives Matter by then. Before 2020. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I'm not going down. It's 30 year in a row. You've let activists disrupt a peaceful Christmas tree lighting where it's not fun anymore. So yeah. So Seattle has gone downhill. And I'll also say though, for a sane person, Snowflake Lane is a little crazy.
Snowflake,
if I don't have kids, you're not going to find me at Snowflake Lane. All right. That has been our sanity check for today. Nicole, come back.
Oh.
You are not going to be here next week.
Oh, yeah. No.
You're leaving after the show today, like any minute.
Yeah.
And you're going to go to
Costa Rica.
You go on more vacations than I do.
I know. I squeeze them in.
For
but this was a perfect time because I'm only going to miss, you know, a couple shows instead of a whole week of shows or anything like that. But
yeah, because we won't have a show on Thanksgiving, but Daryl will be here in your place.
Traveling.
Daryl, we want you to be alive. Daryl will be here. Daryl Davis will be joining us on the show next week. He was nice enough to fill in for you. That's really my only rule for vacations.
Oh, I owe him huge.
My only rule for vacations is one of you two has got to be here. That's so, you know, as long as you work it out amongst each other, I don't care what you do.
Thank you.
Within reason. All right. That has been it for our final live show of the week. We've got a great episode of Sundays with Subscribers coming up. We're going to be joined by Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rogers and Todd Myers of the Washington Policy Center to dissect some of these stories that have come out about Governor Jay Inslee not meeting his climate goals and not living up to his reputation as the climate governor. So I really hope that you will take advantage of an opportunity to support our show by going to undividedpod.com. Undividedpod.com. It's just $5 a month to support this show, 5 shows a week, 1 for subscribers. We're really trying to position ourselves well for the 2024 election. So if you've got $5 a month to spare, we would certainly appreciate the support. We'll see subscribers Sunday, the rest of you on Monday. Spare.